The reading today is from St. Luke, chapter 13, starting at verse 10. On a Sabbath, Jesus was teaching in one of the synagogues, and a woman was there who had been crippled by a spirit for 18 years. She was bent over and could not straighten up at all. When Jesus saw her, he called her forward and said, "Woman, you are set free from your infirmity." Then he put his hands on her, and immediately she straightened up and praised God. Indignant, because Jesus had healed on the Sabbath, the synagogue ruler said to the people, "There are 6 days for work, so come and be healed on those days, not on the Sabbath." The Lord answered him, "You hypocrites, doesn't each of you on the Sabbath untie his ox or donkey from the stall and lead it out and give it water? And then should not this woman, a daughter of Abraham, whom Satan has kept bound for 18 long years, be set free on the Sabbath day from what bound her?" When he said this, all his opponents were humiliated, but the people were delighted with all the wonderful things he was doing. This is the word of the Lord.
Morning. It's good to see you today. It's a lovely sunny day. Next year, I'll do the courtesy of posting when I'm going on holiday as early as I can, and then you can book your holidays avoiding those dates, because that way you won't get wet weeks. You will have sunshine, and I will take the hit take the hit on behalf of Team Emmanuel. People said, "Oh, did you have a good holiday?" I said, "Well, it was wet, very wet." We're going to tell that story again, and we're all going to tell it, because one of the things I learned this week, interestingly, is repetition is good for remembering. But in particular, it doesn't quite work in what we're about to do. When we make notes on something, if we go back to those notes within 12 hours and revisit them and potentially rewrite them, we remember up to 60% of what we have written. If it's within 24 hours, it goes down to 40%. But taking notes on here's the thing for all of you techno dudes that do everything on computers, laptops, or phones, you are less effective at taking notes on phones, computers, and tablets. You don't remember as much. The act of writing is a far better way of remembering. But we are going to repeat that story, because repetition is really good. And we're all going to tell it together, and we're going to need some help, because there's a repeating pattern of words that Jesus said a phrase there, and we're going to repeat the word, because actually it's very important to the whole of the story. So, some volunteers, just two ideally, but at least two. Lena, you're very good at helping. Anyone else? Noah? Okay, Dylan, you can come out. It doesn't matter, as many as possible. Joni, you can come out. Are you going to help Noah, or are you going to help Dylan, or are you going to help your sister? You're going to help your sister. Okay, so it's going to be Team Satherley, and then Noah and Dylan. Noah and Dylan, you go over that side. So do you want to be the ox or the woman?
The ox.
The ox. I thought you probably would be. So this half... No, it's absolutely no writing. You just need to come out here because, okay, people need to be able to see you. And if you hide behind a desk, people can't see you. Okay? So you need to come and stand by your sister here. Well done. And this side, you are going to be with Joel. That's not Joel, that's Noah and Dylan. So, you lot are going to be untie the ox, okay? And we're going to pretend to be an ox. So can we put some horns up? Untie the ox. And you're going to help by repeating. So we're going to say, untie the ox. And we're going to do the ox. Untie the ox. Let's say that together. Untie the ox. And this half are going to be, and set the woman free. Okay, and set the woman free. So let's practice that. untie the ox and set the woman free. Good, well done. That pattern is going to repeat. I'm going to say a line. And at the end of every line, we're going to do the untie the ox and set the woman free. Okay? Let's go. Ready, Jonah, for the oxy bit? So, Jesus was teaching in the synagogue. Untie the ox and set the woman free. When he spotted a woman, her back bent double. Untie the ox and set the woman free. He called her forward. He laid his hands on her. Untie the ox and set the woman free. She stood up straight and gave thanks to God. Untie the ox and set the woman free. But the ruler of the synagogue was angry and indignant. Untie the ox and set the woman free. You've healed on the Sabbath. You've broken our laws. Untie the ox and set the woman free. There are 6 days for healing. Do it in your own time. Untie the ox and set the woman free. But Jesus just sighed and shook his head. Untie the ox and set the woman free. You hypocrites, he muttered. You hypocrites, he cried. Untie the ox and set the woman free. You loose an ox and lead it to the water. Untie the ox and set the woman free. You do it on the Sabbath and think nothing of it. Untie the ox and set the woman free. So why not the same for this daughter of Abraham? Untie the ox and set the woman free. Why not show mercy to this daughter of Abraham? Untie the ox and set the woman free. Bound by ropes and bound by illness, untie the ox and set the woman free. Bound by rules and regulations, untie the ox and set the woman free. Bound by tradition, bound by theology, untie the ox and set the woman free. Bound by institutions, bound by bureaucracy, untie the ox and set the woman free. Bound by everything but mercy, untie the ox and set the woman free. So let's follow the one who died on the cross. Untie the ox and set the woman free, and set us free by his pain and loss. Untie the ox and set the woman free. So let's all say together 3 times, let's untie the ox and set the woman free. Let's untie the ox and set the woman free. Let's untie the ox and set the woman free. Let's untie the ox and set the woman free. Because that's what it means to live in Jesus' community. Can I have a big round of applause for my little helpers? Thank you. So why are you here today? Why do you come? I often ask myself that question at 7 a.m. in the Sunday mornings when the alarm goes off. And I'm thinking, oh, why? It's interesting, this story, isn't it? As we look at what's going on here, what it says and what it doesn't say. You see this meeting going on in a synagogue, and synagogues were numerous around Israel, and synagogue worship was different from temple worship. There was one temple, and they gathered in that for their sacrificial worship in Israel, but synagogues were numerous. Every town and village would have a synagogue, and they would gather and they would read the word and they would listen to it being taught and spoken of. But it was different from temple worship. And so Jesus was there and was invited to speak that day. And I just imagine what was going on. Synagogues weren't necessarily big things like the temple in Jerusalem. They tended to be a lot smaller. And there were places where men and women could be together, at least in the same room. They may be separated into women and men sit different sides, but they could be in the same place, which wasn't necessarily the case for the temple, where there was different courts, and as you progress through them, they slowly ruled out certain groups of people. And in the synagogue, there's this woman that's there. And we don't know why she came. The Bible doesn't tell us. It doesn't give us any clues that she came because Jesus was there. She just came to the synagogue. And at the start, you see this woman who is completely bent over, the Bible tells us, completely doubled over. She can't meet the eye contact with anyone there. And in a tradition that has people who are sick as being sinful, she is treated with great distrust. You know, what has she done in her life to be like that? How naughty must she have been to have this level of sickness? And of course, we know that Jesus teaches that sickness and sinfulness don't go necessarily hand in hand. And you're not just, sometimes you're sick because you're sick and not because you're sinful. And in this case, the sickness was brought on by something completely different anyway, and only Jesus saw it. Only Jesus knew that actually what was holding her was something demonic. She was being bound by a demonic oppression, and that was manifesting itself in this sickness. And again, Jesus makes it clear that that isn't always the case either. It's not all, sickness isn't necessarily as a result of demonic oppression either. But that's what was binding her. And you can imagine this woman comes in and she's been alienated because society has gone, what's the matter with her? What's she done wrong? We're keeping our distance from her because sinfulness, you know, in that sort of culture was somehow sticky. And could, you know, you, if you went too close to sinful people, you could somehow be, you could catch their sinfulness. And she was, you know, to be kept at an arm's length and distant. And we've no idea why she comes to the synagogue that day. But what I love about the story is when she comes because she comes to worship God. And yet, who's already in the synagogue? God is already there. God is already there teaching. God is already there speaking words of life to people. And what we see in this story is this woman plays out the role of Hagar. And Lou actually touched on it earlier. Remember the story of Hagar? Hagar, the slave woman who Abraham is given to have a child with, completely missing the point of God's promise, and has a child, and because it's not the child of the promise, Abraham gets rid of her and she's thrown out, because Abraham has a child with his wife Sarah, and they have Isaac. And so Hagar is pushed out. And what we see in that encounter is she reveals one of the names of God at that point. She said, "He is the God who sees me." Isn't that what we see here? This woman comes in. She can't make eye contact with anyone because she's bent over double. She can only look at their feet. That's how she recognizes people. Oh, that's their shoes. That must be such and such a person. Or by their voice. And she doesn't recognize Jesus' voice. She doesn't come to meet with him. She has no expectation of what's going to happen that day. And yet, there's the El Roi, the God who sees me. And she catches the eye of Jesus. Jesus sees her while he's teaching. And he doesn't say, "What do you want me to do?" Because what Jesus sees is what's really going on. Jesus sees that she's being held in a spiritual oppression. And that irritates and annoys Jesus so much that he needs to deal with it. He cannot stand the fact that his created, his loved creation is being held in oppression by evil forces, and so sets her free. And so he says that, and says to her, and he says to her, "Woman, you are set free from your infirmity." And in doing so, he gets rid of that spiritual oppression that's binding her and holding her oppressed. Sets her free completely. And that should be happy story. Everyone in there should be going, "Brilliant, this is great. The God who sees me is also the God who heals me." And yet that's not how the story goes. I sometimes struggle to reconcile my conscience. Have you ever heard the word imposter syndrome? The terminology, imposter syndrome, where you feel that somehow you feel an imposter in the place that you're in. Now, I was at the university this week, starting a course there, and what was really interesting is the guy who was taking us, the professor of theology, one of the professors of theology at the university, said, "Who feels they shouldn't be here? Who feels that somehow they're entirely inadequate for this course?" Seven of us on the course, all seven of our hands went up. "Yes, we feel entirely inadequate. We feel as if somehow we shouldn't be here." And he says, "Don't worry." He says, "That's imposter syndrome." And he said, "I feel it every time I stand up in front of you." And he said, "I've got a PhD." He said, "I'm a professor here at the university, and I feel a fraud every time I stand up in front of you." He said, "It's imposter syndrome. And I feel that at times." Why? Because ultimately I know what I'm like. And I know that I have flaws, and I know that I have failings. One of the times that it really strikes me and comes to my fore is when I walk through Chichester, and Chichester at the moment has quite a growing number of homeless and a growing number of a sort of street community who are often found begging in the streets, and in particular the underpass. You know, the underpass that comes from the Northgate car park up to North Street, and you walk through there and there's people there begging. And begging is a huge ethical issue for our country, and I'm not going to deal with the sort of practical theology behind the whole issue or the ethical issues behind begging, because it's vast. But I do know the answer isn't always to give money, because that's sometimes not the helpful thing. But in not giving money, I tell you, when I feel imposter syndrome, I dread one of you lot being in that underpass and seeing my inaction. I just do, because I know that actually the teachings that we profess from this place say that we should be reaching out to the poor, the needy, the lost, the hopeless in our society. And I struggle at that, to reconcile with my beliefs, with my actions. And I'm sure I'm not the only one that suffers from imposter syndrome, that struggles to reconcile their beliefs with their actions at times. And sometimes we get it wrong. And sometimes we do the right thing in our inaction in those situations. But we do get it wrong. And God sees the motives of our hearts. And that's what really upsets me, is that God sees what's going on inside of me. And the fact that I might be concerned with what you think about it, it really pales into insignificance when it comes to what God thinks about me, when he sees my inaction in certain circumstances. And this synagogue ruler responds in entirely the wrong way. I would love to know what Jesus was teaching on that day. I would just like, the Bible doesn't tell us. And so we've no idea. what Jesus was teaching about. I mean, I just dread to think if it was the book of Exodus, and we have this story of people being set free from the oppressive regime of the Egyptians, and then this happens, and it's somehow this synagogue ruler responds in this way. We've no idea what Jesus is teaching of. But the synagogue ruler gets gets upset. He hates the fact that this woman has been set free on the Sabbath. She's been completely released from her position and her place of slavery, a place of oppression, a place of a bondage. And that what we see here is the man completely obsessed with one thing and forgets to look at the whole thing. In the 1960s in South America, a movement of theology came out called liberation theology. It came from the place where a lot in South America at that time, a lot of very small, very large communities of hugely poor people grew up in large cities and areas. And they reflected on the issues that there was massive poverty and also that the political classes and political regime was so unjust that everything about the system kept them in that place. There was nothing they could do to get them out of that place because the way the governments were set up, it kept them there, and there was the ruling elite class that was corrupt as anything, and they kept them oppressed. And out of that came this theology of liberation, and it sort of came to real fore in the sort of 1960s, and it was all about having people set free from where they were, to be released into the fullness of God and to be set delivered. And actually, we very sort of drew out the Exodus story where God takes people from oppression and delivers them to a promised land, where that land flowing with milk and honey. And that seems great, but it's hugely flawed. It's hugely flawed, and it's not particularly popular as theology nowadays because it doesn't look at the whole. It doesn't look at the whole story of the Bible, because there are times when God says, live with it and live in it. You know, as you reflect on the sort of theology of liberation, how do you deal with those people that are in North Korea? And we, not this new one, but the new one before, had the lady who was from New Christian in North Korea who said, you know, I feel God's asking me to serve in this place, and I witness for him in the place, and at no time am I crying, God's set me free from this, and God's promising to be with her in it, not necessarily to deliver her from it. It also, if you take the Exodus story, that one of the huge flaws with the sort of liberation theology of God setting people free for the promised land is it naturally follows a line to the sort of horrific end of theology the American culture of you do this for God and he's going to bless you and you're going to become rich and prosperity gospel, thank you very much, over on this corner, top marks. The prosperity gospel, because God sets you free for blessings and for wealth. Well, that's just not true. And so this synagogue ruler completely misses the whole point forgets to look at the Bible as a whole and doesn't see that God's heart is to set people free. Doesn't realize that actually the story of the Sabbath is about a blessing. The first thing God blesses in the whole of creation is not a person, it's a thing, it's a day, the Sabbath. The Sabbath is supposed to be a blessing to humanity. And keeping people bound in bondage is not blessing them. That's keeping them in oppression. And so Jesus sets this person free completely and in doing so upsets them. And Jesus tells them off and rebukes them and says, You release your donkey or your ox to take it to water. You work for that, an animal, and yet for this woman, this child of Abraham, this child that's special and unique and talented and beloved beyond measure in the eyes of God, you would see her kept in oppression. just because it's done on the Sabbath. You hypocrite. Lays into him big style. We get it wrong. I get it wrong. What we know about this story is Jesus rebukes the synagogue leader, calls him a hypocrite. Does Jesus love that guy any less? No. His heart for that guy has not changed. He still loves that synagogue leader. In fact, if that synagogue leader was the only guy left on earth, he would still have journeyed to the cross for him. God's heart for that synagogue leader has not changed. Yes, we get it wrong. God does want to set people free. He does want us to deliver us from the things that bind us. And he wants to encourage us to do that as well. Imagine what would happen if Jesus had seen this woman and this woman had come to Jesus and said, heal me. And Jesus said, sorry, love, it's my day off. You know, that would have made a rubbish story in the Bible. He sets her free. And we're called to respond to the follow me of Jesus. And that means to live the life that he asks of us, which is a life of obedience to the laws of God. Jesus never broke one single one of the commandments. So did he break the law of the Sabbath? No, because he couldn't have done. Because he was completely true to the commands and to the Torah and to the laws of God. He did not break the commands of the Sabbath. And God says, be obedient to me. Be obedient. Set people free. Set people free because I am the God who sees you. And at times we get it wrong. And if you get it wrong, we have a God who sees you. He sees that you get it wrong. He saw the synagogue leader, and it may be that you associate in this place with the synagogue leader. And actually, that's a difficult place to live in because he's the baddie in this story, isn't he? And it may be, as I've said, I share that imposter syndrome, and I probably associate myself with that synagogue leader, and yet Jesus never stopped loving him either. But it may be that you associate with that woman and you need to be set free. We have a God who sees and who wants to release you today. We're going to come to communion now. And in coming to communion, we come to the table where we recognize that the great deliverance of God was done on the cross. When the power of God to overcome the weight of our sin was demonstrated. When the power of God to demonstrate the power of death was demonstrated as God the Father rose Jesus from the dead. We declare his goodness. We declare together that he is Lord. He is Lord over everything. He's Lord over nature. He's Lord over our sickness, our diseases, our oppression. And if you've got imposter syndrome, don't worry. He forgives you. And he says, follow me. Let's start again. Follow me. Do you want to stand? We're going to share the peace and then we're going to come to communion. It may be that today you don't know why you came. You just came because it's Sunday and it's what you do. And I pray that today, if you haven't done so already, that even in the communion that you realize God was already here. He was here when you walked through the door. He was here wanting to meet with you. The peace of the Lord be always with you. So why don't you share the peace with those people around you?